Test, 1, 2.
Double test on this end.
This is on auto level, so I think that should work pretty well.
And yeah.
MP3, 48 kilohertz, okay?
That'll do.
Okay. All right, so that should be recording us in some sort of stereo format there.
That's great. Our first episode was we talked to geologists who are monitoring Mount Rainier, so it's all about like the sound of the volcanoes and like the seismic stuff. So that's pretty cool.
Some good rumbles.
Yeah, some really good rumbles. Some almost like rhythmic. I guess Mount St. Helens during certain periods of eruption a little while ago would create this rhythmic like drum sound that like. You know, it repeated almost as if someone was banging a drum. So
yeah,
it was a source of a mystery to be solved. So
hey, let me play this earthquake. I know where it's hidden, so I'll give you this Easter egg. And while you're listening to this, I'm just gonna run and tell my kids who are just starting lunch to keep it down.
No worries.
I forgot that they have lunch hour right now.
That's funny.
So here's the
earthquakes make some of the loudest natural sounds in the sea. When a small earthquake happens off the coast of Washington or British Columbia, this is what it sounds like.
Some of that rumble?
Yeah, I got that rumble. Sounds familiar.
Yeah, it's pretty good with the earphones on.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so cool. I think we're recording here.
Okay, we're recording on this end. So I usually just start by asking you to introduce yourself and how you like to be called, like, you know, any titles or things like that, and then, you know, just like a brief line about the work that you do. So
sure.
I'll just start there.
Yeah, so my name is Scott Veers. I'm an oceanographer who's turned into a marine biologist because killer whales make such cool sounds underwater. And today, the hat I'm wearing is a coordinator of something called the Orcasound Hydrophone Network, which puts underwater microphones in the habitat of killer whales so that we can all listen to them when they come into our region and also listen to what their underwater environment sounds like.
Great. In the past, you've described orcas as masters of sound. Can you explain a little bit more of what that means, or go a little bit deeper into that?
Sure. Yeah. It's killer whales are globally distributed, and they are keystone predators in most marine ecosystems. And part of the reason they're so good at hunting and being at the very top of the food chain. Is that they use sound, and sound is much more useful than light when you're hunting underwater. In the oceans, there's often sediment or plankton, plants growing, and so you can't see very far in the ocean, especially around here in Seattle. It's unusual to see more than 10 meters or 30 feet. And so if you're trying to find salmon to eat that might be swimming 100 meters below you, like a whole football field down underwater, you can't see them. And so the only way to find them is with sound. And so not only do they coordinate their hunt by vocalizing to each other, calling or whistling, but they do this incredible thing that other toothed whales do. They make a sound inside their head. It comes out of their forehead as a beam, like a flashlight. And then they listen very carefully for the faint echoes of that echolocation pulse or click off of a fish. And the thing that's causing the reflection inside the fish is a tiny little swim bladder. It's a little air pocket that might be the size of a softball if it's a big Chinook salmon. And so they can hear their sound of their click bounce off of that fish 100 meters away, even though the object is only the size of a softball. It's incredible.
That's amazing. And then they also have a rich language for communicating with each other. Is that what kind of sounds do they make, and what do they mean, I guess, when they're talking to each other?
Yeah, they have they have a dialect. It's analogous to a dialect in a human language, but it makes them unique from other types of killer whales around the globe and in the region. So the calls that the southern resident fish-eating killer whales make is totally distinct from the calls that northern resident fish-eating killer whales make. And it's also different from the sounds made by killer whales that come to eat marine mammals around Seattle and Puget Sound. So just by listening to the calls they're making, you can tell which type of killer whale they are, and even which pod, based on the family groups within this type of killer whale, have their own favorite calls that the other ones don't use very much. So we have three pods in the southern residents. J, K, and L is just the letters of the alphabet they got. And they each have a couple of calls that usually they make mostly by themselves. And so if you learn to recognize those three calls, you can infer which pod you're hearing, even though it might be the middle of the night and you have no information about who it is visually.
Right. That's amazing. What's the, what are the differences, I guess, between those? For instance, I guess J pod is one pod. What's one of their favorite calls sound like, you know, descriptively?
Yeah. Meow is the short answer. J pod has this sort of, honking sound. It goes up and down a little bit. It's S1, so it's the first call of the southern residents that was ever categorized by a human brain. And the sounds are numbered up to about 40, and there's been some aggregation of sounds over the years, but basically there's about 25 different sounds that southern residents make that we hear as sort of distinct calls. S1 is the J-Pod's favorite call, if you will. S16 is the call that I think of as most commonly made by the K pod, and then S19 is sort of an upward whistle, and that's made more commonly by L pod. The K pod's interesting that almost everybody who hears it says, "Oh, that sounds like a kitten." It's like So it's nice. They're slightly different from each other. Most people, even elementary school kids, can learn to recognize those three as distinct.
That's a pretty wide variety. That's amazing. So I'm curious about how much we know about orca language. Like, for instance, do transient pods, like, would they recognize this in some way, or is there like a superstructure language that they all understand, and then these dialects, you know, that are unique, I guess.
Yeah, that is a great question, and only a few folks have listened carefully enough to hear those patterns. But the answer is complicated. There's one cool thing is that there was a study where they listened to calls from all types of killer whales all around the planet, and they noticed that one call, no matter geographically where the killer whales were living or what they were specializing in, sounded similar. And in the southern resident catalog, it's S10. I call it the squeaky balloon. It sort of sounds like, and that is known in the literature as an excitement call. And it turned out that all around the planet, that's a common call. And so if we're looking for an analogy in human vocalization, it might be sort of like laughter. You know, no matter what human culture you're listening to, the laughter sounds similar.
Excellent.
So when we hear that, we often associate it with being excited, something exciting happening. Other than that, the excitement call, we have no idea what any of these calls means. And we're just getting to the point where artificial intelligence and modern computational tools are helping us see these patterns. So I'm excited about what we've made it easy for humans to listen in the last couple of years, and now just in this fall, it's becoming much easier for artificial intelligence to listen alongside human intelligence.
That's fantastic.
So I expect we'll see more patterns, but part of the problem is that when you're listening to a single microphone underwater. It's like listening with one ear in a crowded cafe. It's very hard. You can't really figure out who's saying what. And underwater, you know, these whales are making most of their calls underwater. They're underwater like 90% of the time. They're not visible to us. So we don't know where they are relative to each other as we're listening. So it's very difficult to tease apart the context, the behavior, when you hear a particular sound. So someday we may be able to have underwater cameras, multiple hydrophones that let us just say, oh, that call was made by the calf, and then this call was made by its mother. And then we may be able to get the spatial and behavioral context to tease apart what each of those signals means.
Really fascinating. So ideally, you know, in ideal conditions, the ocean is a fairly noisy place. You have other wildlife making noise. You have, you know, seismic things, all kinds of stuff. Weather. What is the soundscape of Puget sound like now with, you know, human interaction and stuff?
Yeah, so the short answer is most of the human influence in the killer whale's habitat comes from vessels, primarily commercial ships. So if you listen to our live hydrophones for a few hours while you're working, you probably won't hear killer whales because they only come by once or twice a day in the summertime and once or twice a month in the other seasons. So what you will hear, though, is pretty much once an hour you'll hear a commercial ship go by. And sort of a slow onset as the whales move at a few knots, but the ships are moving at like 20 knots. So you sort of hear them come and go within a half hour or 45 minutes. So that's the dominant source of noise pollution in the killer whale's habitat. The second most important or dominant source of noise is boats. So think powerboats zooming by. It usually takes them just a couple minutes to go by, but they raise the noise pollution levels about as high above the natural levels as a ship does. And other than that, everything else happens only occasionally. Sonar sometimes is tested near the killer whale's habitat or in the killer whale's habitat. We've heard that happens once per year, roughly, either from the Canadian or the U.S. Navy doing training or testing. And then in certain parts of Puget Sound, there are other really loud but short duration sounds like pile driving. In other parts of the ocean, seismic exploration is another huge source of noise, but we don't have that much in the inland waters of Washington.
Mm-hmm. Some of these questions are going to be, you know, fairly basic, but I might know the answer, but it's helpful for the listeners if you can take us through what does all of that noise pollution do to orcas?
Yeah, so we talked about how important echolocation is for the whale's ability to find the salmon, which we have made scarce up and down the West Coast through many impacts on salmon, either on land or in the oceans. So that's our primary concern, is if you raise the noise levels around a killer whale that's trying to forage or hunt, you make it more difficult for them to hear the faint echoes of their echolocation clicks off of a salmon. And so when our modeling, the best available modeling, suggests that when killer whales are trying to echolocate in the presence of ship noise, they're losing something like 90% of their foraging efficiency. So basically, it's like you're looking for food out in the forest at night with a flashlight, and somebody's made it really smoky around you. So your flashlight beam doesn't go nearly as far into the forest. It's mm-hmm. going like, you know, 1 foot instead of 100 feet.
Right.
Or 10 feet instead of 100 feet. So that's the level of impact, is sort of 90% of their opportunities to find fish are taken away for that half an hour or 45 minutes that the ship is going by.
Right, which is especially critical just with dwindling numbers of salmon and that being the exclusive thing that they eat.
Yeah, and it's hard to show that I mean, you have to. It's difficult to show that that has a behavioral effect, that noise, because the killer whales are also, in some sense, they're used to it. But careful behavioral studies led by some of my colleagues who are based here in Seattle at Oceans Initiative, by carefully watching from San Juan Island what the whale's behavior is when the ships aren't around versus what it's like when the ships and boats are around, you can start to slowly, over decades of effort, try to tease apart the behavioral response. And this has been done even more thoroughly with northern resident fish-eating killer whales up in British Columbia. But what you see is that the killer whales are less likely to begin foraging when there's vessels nearby impacting their noise environment and maybe also disturbing them physically. And they're also less likely to begin foraging if they're not already foraging. They probably hear that it's too loud, it's not worth their effort, so they'll try to travel to a different place rather than beginning to forage, right, which they might do if it was very quiet.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I mean, just the last. It's also important, the echolocation is the main way they find the fish, but then there's coordinating the hunt, like deciding who's going to do the deep dive and go down a football field underwater to find this thing in the darkness. And then it's well documented that they share food just like we do within our family groups. And so being able to communicate that you have caught a fish and that you're bringing it to the surface and everybody in your matcher line or family group should come over to get a piece of it, that's also part of the efficient foraging strategy that they're using. And so the calls that they make they're much lower frequency than the echolocation clicks. So there's a different interaction, or we call it masking. The level of disruption of the communication system is different than for the echolocation system, because there's different amounts of high frequency noise masking the echolocation clicks, then there's low frequency noise masking the communication calls and to some extent whistles. And the last little piece of that, which is a little hard to put all in your mind, but most ships have they put out the most amount of noise at low frequencies. So they actually have similar masking potential. That is, they're impacting communication about as much as they're impacting echolocation. So, you know, when the ship is going by or a powerboat is zooming by, they may have lost about half of their opportunities to communicate with each other.
Wow, that's great. That's a huge amount of impact. Is there, you know, through your work with Orca Sound, is there any traction in lowering boat traffic obviously the plight of the southern residents has been, you know, brought to the forefront and kind of been an international story for a while here, but I'm wondering if is there any movement that we would be getting to a place where we can regulate some of that or provide incentives for shipping, things like that?
Yeah, actually there's been a lot of movement in the last couple of years, and I think there's potential for much more movement in the next couple of years. Thanks to the Southern Resident Killer Whale Task Force that Governor Inslee initiated, a bunch of recommendations came out just last end of 2018, something like 35 recommendations for how to improve the plight of the southern residents, and many of them had to do with noise. So there were recommendations to reduce vessel disturbance. So that can be boats or ships. On the ship side, there's a recommendation to quiet ferries. Washington State ferries obviously is something that Governor Inslee can get a lot of traction on. So I'm excited that, you know, we're starting to retrofit ferries with electric motors instead of inline diesel engines, and that has the potential to reduce some of the low frequency noise that we're talking about. Most of the high frequency noise for a vessel like a ferry comes from the propellers, so retrofitting with electric isn't necessarily going to reduce that. But just the fact that we're doing that for our ferries in part to reduce noise, will help us understand that we should prioritize having better propellers on future ferries, or slowing down when the killer whales are nearby. Almost any vessel will do this thing with its propeller called cavitating. When you're pushing it hard, when the propeller is turning faster than it's designed to, or you're trying to go at a beyond your cruising speed, most engine propulsion systems will cause this thing called cavitation, which just puts out a bunch of white noise, and that's a source of high frequency noise for boats and ships. So anything we can do to reduce cavitation will help with the masking of echolocation clicks. So that's where we have a huge opportunity, and the Canadians have already helped quiet ships by encouraging them to slow down when they're in killer whale habitat. So that's something that is beginning to be considered here in Washington State. There's a new initiative called the Quiet Sound Initiative that is just spinning up this winter. And its main goal is to reduce the amount of noise radiated by ships. So slowing down is an option, and so are permanent quieting technologies like maintaining your propellers, making sure that your shaft doesn't have stuff wrapped around it. So there's the good news about noise pollution in the orca's habitat is that unlike many types of chemical pollution, as soon as you quiet the source, the pollution goes away. With chemical pollution, we have decades-old problems that will last for tens or hundreds of years before we can clean up that chemical pollution. That also affects the killer whale's recovery. But the Navy is the biggest employer here in Washington State, and they are experts in how to quiet ships. So we have all the resources we need, and probably a bunch of economic opportunity to quiet commercial ships of all types, whether they're container ships or oil tankers. Bulk carriers are the most common types of ships in our waters. So I'm excited for the Quiet Sound Initiative to look at each type of ship and think about, like, what are the easy ways to quiet this particular type of ship for killer whales specifically. The last little piece of that is that all the boats, right? If they're going fast near whales, they have an equivalent impact. But luckily, we have now on the books here in Washington State a new law that says when you're near killer whales within a half nautical mile or about a kilometer of killer whales, you have to slow down to 7 knots. And for most vessels, that's a significant drop from their cruising speed, and we've got multiple studies that show that that is a great way to reduce your impact in terms of acoustic impact. So that's something that hopefully all your listeners will do if they're out in a powerboat, is if you see a whale, you can slow down and reduce your acoustic impacts dramatically, essentially by stopping or going very slowly.
That's great. Kind of connected to what people can do, what's the best way for people, out through non-boaters to, contribute to Orca Sound or get involved, and try and help out the pod?
Yeah, well, it's an exciting time technologically, because visual sighting networks are doing a great job of keeping track of where the killer whales are and protecting them. So you can join a sighting network like Orca Network here in Puget Sound in the North End, or there are other sighting networks on Vashon Island that might be of interest for some of your listeners there. The Orca Network's Facebook page has been very active the last couple of falls as killer whales come into Puget Sound. So you can help keep track of them and watch out for them that way. In the same way, you can use the Orca Sound web app has made it much easier in the last couple of years for you to not just listen for them, but hit a little button when you hear them. We're in the process of integrating those visual and acoustic detections into a system that can inform all kinds of mitigation for killer whales, whether it's helping Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife get out on the water to enforce those speed limits, or helping the Canadians slow down the commercial vessels, But it's also likely to help with other types of noise mitigation. Like the Navy could receive information that the southern residents are coming in and they've got a new calf, so you definitely don't want to do your testing in Bremerton or Everett this weekend. So I think reducing pile driving noise for the killer whales, slowing down ferries for the killer whales, and reducing naval noise impacts on the whales, all of that is stuff that can be supported by you listening for whales and letting us know when you hear them. And you're doing that in friendly competition with emerging artificial intelligence that's been engineered by total volunteer efforts within Microsoft over the last 18 months. So
wow.
It's an exciting time to listen for whales. And one of the things we're all trying to do is, as you're listening to them, you have this privilege of listening to this wonderful natural phenomenon, or as you're on a bluff watching the whales go by, trying to make it easier for you to take action to help them with the other non-acoustic impacts. Mostly we need to all focus on how to get more salmon into their mouths. So helping Chinook salmon, their favorite kind of fish, recover in all of Washington's rivers, as well as in Canada, Alaska, Washington, and California, that's the full range over which they seek salmon. And so I'm hoping that all these apps and technologies can bring us together so that we can solve these, what are, you know, issues that are, go well beyond Washington State.
That's awesome. I also heard or I read that there was a slight that the pandemic might have been good. Like there's been a lull in some boat traffic. Is that true?
So there was one study that showed that early. It came out remarkably early in the pandemic. I think it's worth looking pretty carefully at studies like that. So there was a hint that at least for it was written from the perspective of Canadian hydrophones and Canadian traffic, there was a decrease in terms of long-term averages compared to the previous. So it's comparing spring 2020 with spring 2019. So I think we should do more of that to look, but anecdotally, what we are observing as killer whale biologists on the water this summer is that the commercial traffic in the U.S. is been about the same. It's maybe slightly decreased for some crossing lines in Puget Sound based on data from a group called Marine Exchange here in Seattle. But for recreational boats, it appears that there was a lot more activity. So the impacts this summer, when the killer whales do specialize on Fraser River salmon and come into the San Juans, there were a lot more recreational boaters on the water. So one thing I think we'll be able to see as we look at our data from 2020 compared to hopefully a COVID-free 2021 as well as previous years is that it's likely that the impact from fast-moving, poorly educated new boat owners was actually a significant detriment from COVID-19. At the same time, there might have been a very slight decrease in noise from commercial shipping.
Interesting. How has the pandemic affected your actual work? Has it changed it very much?
Well, sure. It's made it much more difficult to service hydrophones. You know, normally we would go out and Orca Sound is a coalition. It's a cooperative effort of about 15 NGOs around Puget Sound, including the Port Townsend Marine Science Center and Orca Network, as well as my company Beam Reach. And normally we would partner with each of those organizations to get some divers in the water or do some fundraising and then get volunteers to help improve an educational exhibit. So we haven't been able to do that collaborative work in person. And mostly our hydrophones have kept running, but that's only because we have nurtured, talented volunteers who can, on their own, without breaking COVID compliance, take care of the infrastructure behind this hydrophone network. So that's been the main impact for me. We've been able to collaborate and maybe make a lot more plans and new connections because, you know, Zooming like this is relatively easy and now it's become part of our culture. So yeah. The stage is set for adding a couple of hydrophones at least this next year because we've been able to do some of the legwork planning. but not the maintenance work that we would normally do in the summer.
What does a hydrophone look like, just for those who the uninitiated? Like what does it physically look like? What is that infrastructure?
Yeah, it's basically, imagine a microphone that you would use on stage, like on karaoke, but covered in plastic. There are different types of microphones and hydrophones, but it's basically a little ceramic crystal, and when you squeeze it, it makes a little voltage. So it reacts to pressure. Sound is a pressure wave, by making a little voltage. Usually that voltage is amplified carefully with inside the plastic where the salt water can't get to it, and then it runs up the cable to shore. So it's analogous. I like to call it a hydrophone an underwater microphone, and some are more immune to the pressure in the ocean. So these types that are crystal-based are better than ones that have a diaphragm, because often the diaphragm, if it has air behind it, will get crushed by the pressure of the ocean. So yeah, we tend to use these piezoelectric crystals as the fundamental mechanism that's sensing sound inside a hydrophone.
How far do you drop? Do they need to be, or does it vary? Like, what's the ideal depth?
Yeah, it's a great question. I learned in Hawaii that if your ears are close to the surface of the ocean, like within, you know, a few inches or centimeters, you can't hear much. But in Hawaii, in the wintertime, if you swim beyond the breakers and just put your head about a meter underwater, you get out of this zone where there's surface noise and weird acoustics. So just being a meter underwater, you can hear humpbacks calling in Hawaii with your unaided ears. So basically anywhere a meter below the surface or a meter above the bottom, you get away from these sort of boundary effects in acoustics, and you can hear remarkably well. So most of our hydrophones are dangling off of docks that extend into water that's usually not much deeper than 10 meters. But there are hydrophones that are made that could survive in the Marianas Trench at something like 10,000 meters.
Wow. So these, you just kind of get a couple meters below the surface, I guess, about.
Yeah. Typically for us, 10 meters is about an average deployment depth. Puget Sound can be up to 300 meters deep, and the whales often will dive that deep. But we try to keep our hydrophones close to shore because it's cost less to replace them. Most of the cost of a hydrophone can be cable if you're not staying close to shore.
Yeah. How much does a hydrophone cost, I guess?
Yeah, so it's they're coming down. You can buy off-the-shelf hydrophone that's not really science grade, but certainly lets you listen, for $100 to $300. Often it'll come with a little amplifier and a speaker. So Cetacean Research Technologies is a group here in Seattle that sells that type of equipment, as well as scientific grade hydrophones, which will be from $300 up to $3,000 or even $10,000. If you want a digital hydrophone, where you basically just plug an Ethernet cable into it, you're going to pay $3,000 to $10,000. And if you want to do science, depends on your question, but basically from $300 to $3,000 is somewhere where it's like a really nice microphone, very nice microphone for, you know, recording music in a studio.
Yeah, like Neumann grade.
Yeah, right.
Do you, how many, I'm sure I can dig this up somewhere, but just like offhand, how many hydrophones do you have deployed right now throughout Orca Sound?
Yeah, so the Trump administration has not been good for NOAA budgets, which used to fund us. So we had 5 hydrophones in the heyday of NOAA funding, around 2010 or 2012. Since then, we've been able to keep 3 going, one on San Juan Island, and then 2 at the entrance to Puget Sound, the Port Townsend Marine Science Center, and then Orca Network hosts a hydrophone at Bush Point, which is on the sort of southwest side of Whidbey Island. We're hoping to put hydrophones in around Vashon Island, in South Puget Sound at the Mast Center, and maybe Possession Sound up near Everett at a place called the Sunset Beach. So those are some of our initial plans. There's also potential sites further out towards the ocean, like in the Strait of Juan de Fuca. There's a site that the Center for Whale Research has been maintaining, which we're hoping to get online at some point. So the stage is set. The good news is that even though hydrophones are expensive, the little computers we're using to digitize the sound and stream it to your headphones are really cheap now. You know, $50 to $100 buys you a Raspberry Pi computer that's totally capable of taking the signal from the hydrophone and turning it into a stream of audio that works in any web browser now.
Wow, that's amazing.
So, yeah, like 60 to 90% of the cost of a new hydrophone is the hydrophone. Like, in the past, it was more like half and half. You had to buy a big computer and software and stuff. But all that's getting nicely miniaturized, and it won't be long before we're making our own digital hydrophones. And it's literally a matter of plugging the internet into the hydrophone.
That's amazing. That's so cool. Excellent. That's most of what I have question-wise, unless there's anything you want to hit or talk about that we didn't get to, but that's about it from me.
Well, the only other thing, I mean, I can send you sound samples, or I can kind of talk you through some of the basics of, like, the Killer Bee calls and stuff.
Yeah, that would be great if we can, if you can talk me through the basics, and then we can send sounds based on that. That would be amazing.
All right, let me pull up a couple examples here.
You already had the, I know one was S1 and one was maybe S16, but yeah, those are the ones we kind of went through, I guess.
Yeah, so I can go through those. That's always a good thing to do. The other thing that might be fun... So here's some examples of – here's one of our quietest background recordings where you get a nice combination of calls, clicks, and whistles. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if you could hear the whistles, but – you probably did hear a kitten-like meow sound.
Definitely.
So that's that S16 K-Pod call. And you might have heard something like a snapping finger, kind of. That's the echolocation clicking. And towards the beginning of that, there are fewer higher frequency whistles that I'm getting old, so I don't my ears don't hear them as well, but I can still pick them up a little bit. Mm. So that's a nice – that gives you a sense of, like, when they're – acoustically active, which is, again, like 90% of the time they're not. It's only when they're resting that we find that they make almost no sound, but they're quite chatty in all their other behavioral states, and that's kind of what it sounds like. You know, you're hearing some clicking going on, you're hearing many calls per minute overlapping often with other calls or whistles. So you listen to that for a while, you start to get the sense that, okay, this is not just one animal making sound, like this is a group. And there's, you know, there's a lot going on acoustically when you listen to the symphony. That's the symphony part that I like to talk about. So that's like kind of what it sounds like if you happen to, you know, sign up for our notifications and you get a chance to listen live. It's going to be something like that. Although there may be a ship that comes and interferes while you're listening in live. The basic three calls that I like to teach folks are the calls that are most commonly used by each pod, because then you're not only learning to recognize southern residents as unique from other types of killer whales or other marine mammals, but you get this awesome ability to tell which family group or which pods you're listening to. So if you hear this call, the S1 call, you're likely listening to J-Pod.
S1.
All right, that's S1. Then we'll do the kitten-like call, the mew, which is S16.
S16.
So if you hear that little mew, that's probably K-Pod. And if you hear S19, that's likely to be L-Pod. And it's more of an upward kind of, I think of it as like a upward rising sound like this.
That's 19.
You hearing those okay?
Yeah, it's almost like a slide whistle or something.
Yeah, a slide whistle, yeah. Yeah, I hesitate to say whistle because, you know, there are whistles that are distinct from calls, but yes, it is like a slide whistle. That's the way to say it. So yeah, there's a catalog that's linked to on that Learn page where you can page through and listen to them all.
Awesome.
I do have a clip where I concatenated all of them, so you can kind of hear the diversity of them.
That's great.
I can send that one to you if you want.
That would be great, yeah.
And then, I think that's the other one that maybe we should play since we talked about it is the S10, the excitement call. So that sounds like the squeaky balloon or excitement call that's common to most killer whales around the planet is, for southern residents, sounds like this.
S10.
Is that loud enough for you?
Yeah. That was great.
Yeah, so that's a quick tour of. There's a couple of other ones that are worth learning, but those are the basics.
That's great. Okay, cool. I found where you can. So I can just download S1, S16, and S19 directly from the site. Okay, I found those.
Yeah, and I'll send you. There's a slate. We've been working on a new version of that call catalog, so I'll send that to you so you can. I think I did a little bit of like fading in and fading out, and I took out the human annotation, which is actually John Forge back in the late 90s annotating his cassette tapes.
So okay.
You can leave John Forge in if you want, because he is the author of the catalog. But I have versions that we've cleaned up that might be better for when you're on air.
That would be great. Awesome. This is so great. This is like perfect for the episode. I'm so excited about it. Thanks again for doing this. This is really incredible. So
sure, thanks for covering it. It's a great time to be raising public awareness about this issue. I think it'll help encourage the port to move a little faster.
Yeah, that's the kind of our goal is to, and you know, in the middle of everything that's going on, to have a podcast that gives you a chance to escape into the natural world, you know, that we're lucky enough to be surrounded by, and maybe take some action where we can to take care of it. So,
yeah, you know, one other thing to check out, since you're focusing in on what I think of as sort of a citizen science project that's it's a long-standing effort. That I was inspired by a group that you should at least check out. It's called Orca Live, and they're still using real audio for their streaming.
Wow!
So I'm hoping that that Paul and Helena, who are now in their 80s, I think, and have been listening for whales like this in this style of trying to help trying to help humans around the world connect with the northern resident killer whales and the cool sounds that they make.
Yeah,
they've been doing this for I think almost 50 years.
Wow, that's amazing.
So it's worth maybe just calling them out as our inspiration. And I'll send a link. I'm not sure if you'll get their site to work in terms of like playing back their live audio, but they're kind of cool in that they're using they partner with explore.org to stream cameras from way up there at the north end of Vancouver Island.
Wow.
And they also have kind of a cool UI for a dialogue between the listeners and the hosts that I'm actually trying to build into, you know, the next version of our listening app. Something like this, the ability for citizen scientists, new listeners to be able to interact with very experienced or expert listeners, sort of like we've been doing today.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Got it. Awesome. This is spectacular. Thank you again for your time and for all of the information and detail and work that you do. And I imagine as long as I'm here as the science environment editor, we're going to be covering orcas. So I'm sure either myself or Hannah or one of our writers will be reaching out to you before too long.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Please keep in touch, Ted. And thank you.
Absolutely.
Thanks for doing what you do. I think. They're not quite ready, but this all-volunteer group within Microsoft, I'm so impressed with them, and I really think they deserve a little bit more accolades publicly.
Yeah.
So if you want to do another one, I might suggest that putting you in touch with the three lead developers who've built this incredible tool that it's giving our best listeners a run for their money in terms of, like, this fall when we've been testing it, you know, usually the humans hear what the machines hear, but a couple of times they've heard the calls, like in 3 a.m. where all the best listeners happen to be asleep.
So that's amazing. The machines are getting better than us.
Yeah, they still make mistakes for sure, and that's a painful part of my life is like dealing with all the false positives. But
sure.
There's an emerging story which is really I'm finding very exciting is that you know the machines are starting to get about as smart as we are.
Yeah, that's huge. Does that little software clutch within Microsoft, do they work on a whole bunch of projects like that, or they're kind of doing this as their,
two of these three approached OrcaSound because I didn't realize this, but Microsoft has kind of an incredible philanthropic community, much more than I'm finding than other big, you know, tech giants here. And what that manifests in this annual July hackathon, where something like 5,000 employees choose a nonprofit partner or you know some cause for good, and then spend like a long weekend, they're given 4 days compensated to like work on a project for this partner, community partner. It's happening all around the world, so. It's way bigger than the hackathons that OrcaSound has benefited from here generally in Seattle. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, you're getting, you know, usually what we get through hackathons with Democracy Lab in downtown Seattle are, you know, new folks who just come out of a coding school and don't have a lot of experience and they're looking to build their resumes. And they're awesome volunteers, but the Microsoft folks are extremely talented, usually mid-career, and they get a lot done in a long weekend. So,
that's amazing. That's so cool. Yeah, I mean, I think that's like a standalone story for sure that I think Hannah would be thrilled to dig into. So
yeah, well, let me know if she or you are interested. I'm happy to put you in touch with Akash and Prakruti were the two who kind of drove it. Starting in summer 2019 is when they started working on it.
Awesome.
And it's been working since September, and it just gets better and better. So.
Awesome. That's spectacular. I'll definitely be following up about that sort of in addition to other things. So
okay.
Thanks again for doing this. If you just want to shoot me the Zoom or the H1N1 and whatever sounds you think that I can't get from this library, whenever you get a chance, that would be amazing. So I think we're going to try and go into production for this on Monday. So yeah, we have until then, but you know, sooner is better, I suppose. But
okay.
But I really appreciate it.
And when you say go into production, does that mean you're likely to see release it, launch it on?
No, we're about 2 weeks ahead. We just sort of from some actually. When I've made podcasts in the past, I like to produce all the episodes like way in advance of the schedule. Well, when it's something kind of narrative like this, not a straight interview show. But because of some basically sponsorship opportunities, they moved up the schedule. So I'm about 2 weeks ahead. So
okay,
this will probably finalize by the end of next week and then run the week after that. So they come out on Tuesdays. So this should be out a week from this coming Tuesday.
Cool. So, I'll flag that for the Microsoft folks just so they get a sense of who you are. And
that'll be great. I'll be happy to send them a copy. I'm sure we'll it's very likely because I you know the AI portion is the one of the most fascinating parts of the like looking ahead part. So I'm sure they'll get a mention in there. You know. So
good. Yeah. Put the hook in and let me know when you need more.
Awesome. Sounds great. Thanks again for doing this. And yeah, I hope you have a great long weekend ahead.
Thank you, Ted. Nice meeting you.
Talk to you soon.
All right. Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.